This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day. As we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information, presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. Covering a lot of different things around the Umpqua Valley. Back in studio, State Representative Virgil Osborne. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Well, I know it's kind of the calm before the storm in a lot of ways. People tend to put politics on the back seat as they get through the summer, but we're about to move into September, so thought we'd kind of check in on what's going on. You've got legislative days next month, is that right?
Yeah, they're next month. I think they start on the 8th, 8th, 9th, and 10th. We'll be back in Salem with information hearings mostly.
So what else takes place?
Well, it's a time when the lobby kind of comes and meets with us. I'll be there 3 days, and we'll have a meeting literally every other 10, 15 minutes. We have meetings with lobby that want to push bills and want to, you know, do things. Some of them are just changing existing policy, starting discussions, and a lot of these discussions were already started and are already going, you know, well down the road. Also, there are bills that I've been working on all summer that I wouldn't even say some of them are bills yet, but they're concepts that are going to be finalized in legislative days before they're actually introduced in January.
And do you feel like, I mean, this is the legislative days has been a procedure or something that you guys do probably going way back, right?
Yeah, I think, I don't know how long ago they started doing it, but it is good policy because it brings all the legislators back in the, you know, in the room and puts the committees back in order, and we all have a chance to talk about things that, you know, kind of gives you a head start on what's happening. Now, that doesn't always mean it's a good head start. Sometimes things are going to happen that we don't really like, but at least we have an opportunity to get out in front of them.
Now, the next session is a full or short?
It is a full session, so it's just under 6 months.
So now you're in legislative leadership for the GOP. Talk about what you do, what your role is there.
Sure. Yeah, I'm the whip for the party. That means I'm the number three. There's the leader, the deputy leader, and then the whip. And the whip's job, really, most of what I do is in Salem while we're in session. I make sure, kind of like a parliamentarian on the House floor, making sure that our opposing side doesn't get out ahead of us and making sure that our side does the things we're supposed to do. I've served in that position for the last year, a little over a year, and it's been interesting. I've learned a lot, especially regarding, you know, public meetings and policy and, you know, that type of thing. But that's my primary job. I also help with campaigns right now during the campaign season.
So it kind of makes you like an enforcer.
That pretty much is exactly what it is, yes. And I think I got that title. I think I got the position because I'm known for not backing down. And, you know, I don't really care if you're, you know, Democrat or Republican. I'm not going to back down to peer pressure or policy pressure. I'm going to do what's right. And I think that's why they elected me into that spot.
Do you feel like having that role gives Southern Oregon a bigger voice or a bigger seat at the table?
Absolutely. And not only that, in our legislature, you have our leader is Lucetta Elmer, and she's from McMinnville, of course. But the deputy leader is Alex Carlatos, and he's from right here in 10 Mile. The whip is myself, and I'm here right here from Looking Glass. And then when you go over to the Senate side, the deputy leader is David Brock Smith. So Douglas County is represented on both the houses regularly. So yeah, I think it actually leads. We get a lot more is heard from Douglas County. We don't give them an opportunity not to listen to us. They're going to listen to what we have to say.
And that might be the first time in a while. I mean, you all have all been in these roles for a year or so at least, but to have that much representation from this area in leadership, it's probably been a while.
It has been. I think the last time we had this much representation was probably when Representative Bruce Hanna and Representative Tim Freeman were both in office. And I don't remember. I know Representative Hanna was the co-speaker of the House, and I believe county commissioner now. But Representative Freeman, I think, may have been the whip. I'm not sure. But he had a leadership role as well.
Why is it important for Southern Oregon to have that seat at the table?
Well, I think, you know, it's hard enough just being a conservative county and getting heard in a legislature that is primarily not conservative, you know, liberal, whatever it may be the case. And I think it's important that we have an opportunity to be at the table and actually demand to be at the table. And they're not going to deny you from being at the table, especially if you're in leadership. You're going to have that opportunity to get out there. And people need to hear our voice. People need to understand the things that are happening in Southern Oregon, not just Douglas County, but Jackson County, you know, Josephine County, even Eastern Oregon, Southeastern Oregon as well. There's a lot of things that affect folks in these small counties, especially when it comes to labor force and, you know, jobs loss and what have you, that folks from Multnomah County and, you know, Washington County and that area doesn't affect them. So they just don't think about it. Well, they know about it when we're there because we let them know.
Talk about specifics about legislation that you are planning to introduce in this next session.
Yeah, so I have my legislative concepts that are kind of wrapped around child online predators, making stricter punishment for them, giving our police better opportunity to go after them, not letting them have the loopholes they have now to get out. And I have about three bills that cover that, and without going into detail on those, that kind of encompasses everything we're doing. It's going to change some of the age limits for the kids that are actually being pursued as well. Because there's some things we just didn't know until Myrtle Creek Police got together with me and we found out that we don't know if it was an oversight when they made the law or if it was on purpose. But, you know, technically, if you're 16, you know, the guys can get away with a lot more than they need to. So we're going to try to get that changed up to 18. Also, I have a drone bill that we're in the final stages of finalizing that one of my local constituents put together, and we took it to the legislative concepts, and it's going to turn out to be a pretty good bill. And it's a privacy bill, and, you know, it kind of leads into the flock camera thing, even though it's not a flock camera, kind of on the same lines with, I know flocks are a huge deal right now, everybody's complaining, there's a lot of emotion wrapped in it, but the drone bill will keep your privacy. If we get it through, it will also help you keep your privacy.
So what would that do? Is this in terms of, like, people that have their own drones that fly them around?
Well, it won't interfere with them flying their drones, but if they're actually using them to, you know, video or photo, for instance, a neighbor's property or private property, they have to give the neighbor notice that they're going to be doing it. They can't just go fly over it and take pictures, you know, pictures of the backyard or whatever it may be the case, randomly. Because, I feel that technically that probably should be, the neighbor should have a 24-hour notice. And if you're going to be flying over their property. Now, it doesn't affect police and, you know, law. I mean, if they're looking for a suspect, they're not going to have to ask permission to fly over your house. They're going to do what needs to be done. So there's some technicalities in there, but we'll see if we can get through in committee.
What have you been hearing from residents as you've been around the district this summer?
Well, you know, Kyle, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately in some cases, politics is really, there's a lot of emotion in politics. And, I don't make decisions in politics based on emotion, but a lot of folks judge the politicians based on emotion because they've heard something on Facebook or they read something or they feel a certain way because somebody said this and they're angry about this or that. I hear a lot of that, especially I was at the fair this year. I hear a lot of that, you know, particularly right now, the hot topic is drones. And first off, I don't think that drones should be a political football, but it's turning into a political football. I'll be making a statement on not drones, but flock cameras. I'll be making a statement on flock cameras later, probably today or tomorrow, in my opinion on them. But, you know, I'll just go ahead and say it out loud. I think when it comes to flock cameras, municipalities have those decisions. They can not let the police force have them, or they can. I mean, that's each municipality has that latitude to do that. And well, the last thing I want to do is push a bill to go through the state to ban all flock cameras, because I guarantee you, if our legislature gets a hold of this bill and they start pushing it, they won't stop at flock cameras. Your grocery stores won't be able to have cameras. You're not going to be able to have a camera. You have to have a warrant just to have a camera. And there's going to be all kinds of bad what ifs that could happen. But yet it's being used as a political football because people are going, oh, well, people are upset about flock cameras. Well, people don't really spend the time and research to find out about flock cameras. I've spent a fair amount of time on it. And I've also talked to Chief Mills in Sutherland. I've spoken to Chief Kloppenstein in Roseburg and, of course, our Sheriff John Hanlon in depth about what flock cameras are used for, how they're used. And I have an opinion on them. I'm not the authority, so I can't change the law on those. That is something that can happen in each municipality.
Well, and it's been interesting because as people, you know, if they can back away from the emotional side and look at it, there are situations where police agencies have talked about, solving something. And maybe it's a big crime. Maybe it's just something small where somebody's got a stolen vehicle or whatever. And that happened just last week, or I think, in Roseburg. And then there's all the other questions about what if. You know, what if they're used for other, less basic ways?
I have heard some crazy what ifs. I mean, I had a guy at the fair tell me that flock cameras are tied to AI centers and they're tracking us and they're going to find out if we're vaccinated or not. I mean, it's like there's so much emotion and it's just not, you know. I mean, it's just there's no truth to it, but it's emotion. If somebody says it, people believe it. I also was told that flock cameras were used by our sheriff's department with their drones, and they have 8 flock drones. Well, frankly, I work with the sheriff's department pretty darn close. You know, I'm in search and rescue, and I have flown some of those drones, and none of them are flock cameras. They are cameras. There are cameras on them, and they go back to the computer that's in the back of the truck because they're tracking criminals that are running from the police. But see, these are just things that people get a hold of, and then you have these random folks that are going out doing photoing the flock cameras, and you know, it's kind of mob rule when the reality of it is sit down with the police chief, sit down with the sheriff, sit down with the folks that actually use these things, find out what you're talking about before you jump off the cliff. Now, I'm not saying that I'm supporting flock cameras or not supporting flock cameras. I'm supporting don't make policy on emotions. You make policy on what makes sense.
More when we come back. State Representative Virgil Osborne, the interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1240 7 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249. Lars Larson coming in for 1. State Representative Virgil Osborne in, covering a lot of things this afternoon. Let's look ahead to the next session of the Oregon State Legislature. A big thing last time around was the Oregon Department of Transportation. Do you think that's going to be a big topic again in Salem next time?
I think it's going to be a huge topic. There is discussions happening that are outside of the Republican part of the legislature. I will tell you that because our governor right now is campaigning. And as you know, she wants to solve this problem and she wants it to be her win. The reality of it is they're not listening to rural Oregon at all on how to solve this. And I would expect we'll likely see some sort of a new tax actually lined up to go through the legislature in probably February. Now, something that I don't know if it's tied to that, but I was just recently made aware that there is a sales tax that they are talking about, a small sales tax, of course, you know how they start, that they are now going to try to push through the legislature. And I will tell you, you know, people don't vote because they don't think their vote counts, but I can't tell you how important it is that we get out of the supermajority, because if they have 36 seats, I'm talking about the Democrats, if they have 36 seats in the House, they will pass whatever tax they want. Now, that doesn't mean we can't recall it. We did it once before, but I would highly suggest we will be seeing a sales tax introduced in 2027.
And, of course, sales taxes have been introduced for eons and never approved.
Well, I think you're going to see it happen this time, especially if Governor Kotek wins her seat. She won't care. She won't have anything to lose. And frankly, her majority legislature right now, they don't really care either. I mean, they are quickly becoming overran with the Democrat Socialist Party. I mean, you see it nationwide. It's happening in Oregon, too. There are Democrat Socialist candidates that have taken out some of the Democrats in the primary. And it's happening. And I don't mean to, you know, try to alarm everybody and scare you, but I'm telling you, if you never paid attention to politics, politics is paying attention to you. So now's a good time to start paying attention.
And do you feel like that influence is going to make things more I'll say, emotionally intense in the session?
I believe it will be. I think that right now emotions are running high anyway. I mean, we have issues with, you know, obviously, we have homeless problems. We have tax issues. We have ODOT's budget is a big issue because they don't, you know, supposedly they don't have any money. I don't know how they didn't lay anybody off, but they have problems. There are so many things right now that we are so deep in the hole in Oregon. The only way to get out of that is with money. Well, at least in their opinion. Or we could cut services, which is probably what we're going to have to do. But if more money is needed to get out of the hole, that money is going to come from you and me. It's going to come from all of our pockets. So stand by. It's going to get dicey.
Now, the priorities of the session are going to depend on who is elected governor, which won't be known until first part of November. Does that leave anything kind of up in the air in terms of what you would plan or what either party would plan?
Well, I think the Republican Party is rolling ahead with our plans, and we have several bills that we're going to introduce. I think we're rolling ahead just as usual, hoping for the best. I think that I know it. There are a lot of Democrat sponsored bills, legislation right now we're not hearing about. We get little bits and pieces of them as we go on, but they're not talking about them because some of them, frankly, would hurt the governor's race, or for that matter, some of their own. So that they don't like to be out, they don't like to be transparent and be upfront. They want to let you know after it's too late for you to do much about it. So yeah, absolutely, it does. It changes the whole outcome. Now remember, last long session we had almost 4,000 bills, so only around 700 and change went through. I would not be one bit surprised if we don't have 4,000 this time too.
Now having no opposition in your own race means you don't have to campaign, or does it?
You know, it's full on for me. I never stop campaigning. And my definition of campaigning is actually being out in public, doing the things the public wants you to do. You're not going to find me sitting at home. I don't sit at my desk very often. I'm too busy for that. But I generally attend public events. I actually work with other candidates. I've actually financially supported other candidates. So we've given a fair amount of our campaign money to other candidates in the state, trying to help them win their seats, especially in the swing districts. We have some critical swing districts we need to pick up. So that's where I'm spending my time. I haven't put signs out yet, but I will be putting signs out here probably in the next month.
Now, signs when you have an unopposed race is a little unusual.
You know what? People hired me to do a job. Doesn't matter. They're still going to see my face out there, and they're still going to see my signs out there, and hopefully they approve, more approve than disapprove of the job that I do.
Now, you mentioned the governor's race. What are you seeing there? I mean, the polling shows it real close.
It is close. It's within the margin of error. It's better than it's ever been, I think, at least since we've been really tracking it. Christine Drazen, it will be on my podcast, actually, tomorrow evening. So if anybody, you know, people can come on there and they can ask questions. We're live at 6 on YouTube. But I think that right now the state is a mess. And, you know, it's pretty hard to hide that mess. Now, people don't seem to know or don't care enough about politics to understand that Tina Kotek was the Speaker of the House for almost 9 years before she was governor. So a lot of the policies that she introduced, and the Speaker of the House is the second most powerful position in the state, that person introduces legislation that ends up where we're at today. All of the bills, all of the bad policy started with the Speaker of the House allowing it to get to committee, and then the committees take it from there. So, you know, really taking a deep dive on this, we can't afford another 4 years.
Now, with this kind of race, basically you've got the two candidates. I think there is one third lesser-known candidate from one of the other groups, but not a strong third-person presence.
No, and that's different than last time when they ran against each other, because you had Betsy Johnson in the mix, who was strong enough to take votes. And whether she took them from Kotek or she took them from Drazen, she took votes. I don't even know the name of the third person that's running, and I don't think it's really – to get into the race at this point is pointless. The race is a two-person race. We can throw names out. We can do everything we want. They may get a few hundred votes, maybe a couple thousand. I don't know. But the reality of it is the battle lines have been drawn, and it's either going to be Kotek or it's going to be Drazen, one of the two.
Are there other races at Oregon you're especially watching?
Yeah, particularly the race with Cyrus Javidi. He's running against Max Sherman up in Tillamook. Cyrus was the Republican that switched parties, went to the Democrat Party during the session, and so he could vote yes on the ODOT tax, which is crazy. And he changed all of his Republican ways and now agrees with abortion and all kinds of other things just so he could be a Democrat. So we're watching that race really close. We're spending money there. We've actually worked on campaign managers as well. The other race that we're really paying a lot of attention to is down in Southern Oregon, Ashland area, we have Golden. Representative Golden has retired. So, sorry, not Representative, Senator Golden. We have Brad Hicks running down there, who's a great representative. He's a Republican, conservative, but a great representative candidate. And he's in a really good race. I think there's a good chance he'll pull it off. That could change our Senate for years to come.
All right, as we wrap up, if people want to get connected with you, how do they do that?
You can go to my website, you can go to my Facebook, or you can call me, and my number's listed just about everywhere. I'm not going to say it on the radio, but my website's on my Facebook, and that's State Representative Virgil Osborne.
All right, thanks for coming in this afternoon, 1257.
Thank you.
News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. It's presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.